previously on Getting the Mecha.
The expectations from original anime don't really derive from their source, because there isn't a source. It becomes a matter of manipulating expectations through other means, through the PVs, through the trailers, as I said. So many of these that have really put out how we understand anime and its limitations and its boundaries and how they're pushed. I'm Jamal, and you're listening to Getting the Mecha, your weekly anime and manga analysis podcast. From inspiring arcs to game-changing cinematography, I'm on a journey to try and make sense of it all, episode by episode. Enjoy the show. Welcome back to Getting the Mecha, and in today's episode, we are going to be talking about OVAs. This is kind of a follow-up from the last episode I did on original anime. I'm not gonna lie, I kind of came up with it. Okay, I had this episode planned a while ago. I wanted to talk about all the OVAs I watched in the past few months, because I took a journey to watch quite a few, and I'll talk about that this episode. But I also thought that that would be a bit too wild to do, and so on a whim I decided to talk about the OVAs I've watched, especially since you guys were very interested in my take on original anime. And so in today's episode, we're going to be talking about something that is not too far off that. I'm mostly going to be talking about OVAs that are, well, some OVAs that are original. Not all of them are, but some of them are. And why exactly do I like this format? We're mostly going to be talking about some older OVAs, and I think it's about time I took a bit of a blast to the past, because a lot of the time I am talking about, besides maybe Evangelion, a lot of the time I am talking about anime right now, or the modern anime landscape. And so I want to try and perhaps talk about something a bit different today, and hopefully the OVA discussion we have will give a bit more diversity to this podcast, basically. And so on the other side of this, we shall get into the podcast. That is episode 95 of Getting the Mecha, What I Have Learned from Watching OVAs. Last time on the podcast, the topic was original anime, and why exactly I think it's such an important part and vital part of what anime is. And in that episode, I stuck mostly to TV anime, but this week I want to take a look at a more specific, so to speak, format. I don't know if you can call OVAs a format of anime, but that's mostly what I'm going to be calling it for the sake of simplicity, and that is, of course, the OVA. OVA, of course, stands for Original Video Animation, or that's at least kind of what it translates to from my understanding. And what that basically means is that it's technically only meant to exist in the form of video or DVDs. So back then, if you were to buy an OVA in the 90s, it goes through the process of you buying the thing and then watching it, and buying it almost on the get-up, as opposed to, you know, it airs on TV initially. I'm sure it's probably a bit more complicated than that, and I would have to do a bit more research to understand whether there were some things that aired both in OVA format and in TV later, but at least in the most basic form, that's what it really seemed to have been then. Obviously, this has changed quite a bit, because you have companies that are getting access to licensing OVAs these days, and obviously with piracy and so forth, the OVA doesn't really just remain the OVA. It doesn't exclusively just exist on a disc or VHS, for example. But despite these changes in the landscape, I would still say that there is a big value in this format, at least on the artistic level, even if we just remove the economics and how you purchase one and all that out of the question. I would still say that there is a lot to take from these. And you're probably wondering, how exactly do I know this? How do I know that there's value in these? And that's really because I just sat down and consumed a bunch of them. I don't mean just one sitting where I just sat down and watched three in one night. I'm talking about I dedicated about 1 or 2 months to just watching a bunch of OVAs. Why exactly did I do this? I honestly don't know. This was obviously in the middle of, lockdowns and such. And I just thought that it would be a fun idea to do this. I watched everything from Dragon Quest to Ricky O to Gumbuster to JoJo's to so many things. The Hakenden to Yugen Kaisha. I could name so many. Some which I probably don't even remember the name of because there are so many of these. There are almost too many. And it's kind of like a lottery jackpot to just choose one out of nowhere and just get to watching it. There are too many of these, and I watched a bunch of them, and I'm sure I probably only scraped to the surface, but I tried my best to really dig into these, from the popular ones to the not so popular ones and a bunch of things in between. I kind of already answered this question, but why did I do this? I don't really know. I just felt like doing so. I didn't really have a specific goal in mind, and this wasn't, for some sort of challenge type content where I'd do, I challenged myself to watch 60 OVAs and what? No, I don't make content like that. And secondly, it wasn't something that I actively did in the pursuit of making content on it. I kind of just did it because I wanted to maybe just learn a bit more about this meta and the history behind it. And although 90s and 80s OVAs aren't going to give you a complete insight into the history of anime, there's still so much before that, and I don't want you, especially for those that maybe aren't as savvy in the sort of space of anime history, I don't want you to take from this podcast that, the 90s and 80s are just the end of anime history. There is so much more. Anime goes deep in, well, goes very early into the 20th century, and you'd have to really experience a lot of it to really get the full history in terms of the pre-2000s stuff. But that being said, 90s and 80s OVAs are still a really integral part of what anime is, in my opinion. And I really came to learn that by watching a lot of these. There's so many amazing moments and even iconic moments from various animators and directors who are probably, or a good amount of them right now, are quite famous in the space. Some of which unfortunately have passed away, and some who are still around right now and really famous right now. The OVAs, to me, feel like perhaps not a breeding ground, but say where a lot of their most interesting work can be found. Kind of like how I've mentioned before that short films are probably, and these experimental projects are probably where you see these animators at their probably most interesting. We see this on anthology projects all the time. And when you see these animators unrestrained versus what they're like on, say, TV anime or a movie, it feels like two completely different pictures. And I'd say OVAs lean towards the side of being more like these short films and experimental works, even though they aren't experimental per se. But they definitely feel much more creatively exciting, I would say. This was a place where a lot of these animators' work was showcased. If we look to the work of, say, Satoshi Kon or Yoshinori Kaneda or Satoru Tsunomiya and so many more, these OVAs are really important in that regard for animation history, you can argue. And just before we dive into some more specific OVAs, I do want to make clear that the way I'm making it sound, I am making it sound as if that OVAs are kind of a thing of the past and didn't really exist or aren't really a thing now, and they are, but the nature of them is quite different. Of course, they're not a dead format particularly, or at least in the most literal sense, I wouldn't call them dead, nor are they exclusive to the pre-2000s, but I think talking about 80s and 90s OVAs is probably the most genuine way to talk about them, considering how OVAs today and in today's landscape are often treated sort of as add-on episodes or extra episodes to a main series. That's where we hear about them the most. And when we do have works that are of a similar nature to that of an OVA, they usually end up landing on a streaming service, and they're therefore an ONA, being an original sort of net animation that belongs on something like Netflix or Bilibili, if we're talking about Donghua. And so that's why I think it's important to perhaps go back to these OVAs, where the format kind of has a different intention and doesn't feel like an extra episode type thing. These are where we have complete works that were made for video, and these are the ones that I really want to explore today because I'm quite passionate about these, and that's what I spend most of my time watching. And so with that pretty long story time, And so with that pretty long story time out of the way, let's talk a bit about why I really like these. And I'll also do my best to talk about three of probably my favorite OVAs that I watched over this period. And I'll try to throw in some more as well, so you get a bit of an insight or understanding for the appeal of these. This isn't really going to function as a recommendations episode, I hardly ever do that. But at the same time, I acknowledge that it can kind of serve as that, especially if there's someone who is listening. But even though I wouldn't say this podcast is particularly the most new anime watcher friendly podcast, but if you are new, and of course I welcome new anime fans to this show, of course, but if you are perhaps new to anime, or you are even if you are just new to OVAs and this sort of era of anime, even if you are a veteran anime watcher, this can still servers gaining some recommendations, and I'm sure that this will be a few of these will be a nice way to get into this sort of space for anime, even if I'm not directly recommending them to you. Also, finally, before we get into the OVAs, spoiler alerts for the OVAs which I will be speaking about, and those three specifically are going to be JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, 1993 OVA, Gosenzo-sama Babanzai from the 80s, directed by Mamoru Oshii, and then the final one being Gunbuster, directed by Hideaki Anno. So let's start with the first one, which I mentioned, JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Stardust Crusaders. This is an OVA from 1993. There is also one from 2000, which pairs with it, that technically goes prior to the 1993 one. But I'm going to talk mostly about the 1993 one, because I decided to watch this in chronological order instead, because I thought that would be much better. And it actually was, in my opinion. I enjoyed it much more. And just for the historical experience, I thought that was more worth doing too. This OVA is probably one of the more popular OVAs, and it really encapsulates what I really like about OVAs, and this one specifically is one of my favorites. Just a heads up for those who are into JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, I have hardly watched much of the main JoJo series, and I know that that sounds like it committed some sort of crime, like, oh my gosh, I didn't watch part 1 and 2 and then I watched part 3, how dare you, Jima? And yeah, you can perhaps accuse me of that, but I don't really care that much. I watched this more for the fun experience, and if you haven't watched this and maybe watched the main JoJo series and you're thinking that I'm, again, committing some sort of crime, I'd recommend watching this, because weirdly enough, I would say it's very new people friendly, and I don't usually request for works to do this that are pretty much slap bang in the middle of, or not in the middle exactly, because there are about 8 parts to JoJo's at the moment, but I mean, it usually would require some context, and I understand when there's a work that isn't particularly new friendly, that it kind of just goes off of what the readers are already aware of. I get that. But I would say that this one is very new people friendly, and it's very nice in introducing us to the entire like crazy world that is JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, essentially. But just in my defense, I didn't do this to join the conversation because I just wanted to say that I've watched JoJo's. No, I did this because I was genuinely just really curious about it. And considering all the good things I heard about it, I think I just really had to watch it, and it really impressed me. It essentially concerns a boy called Jotaro Kujo that doesn't look much like a boy. I'm basically just explaining JoJo's part 3, so for those that are aware of JoJo's, I'm not explaining anything unique, but it concerns Jotaro Kujo, who is a quote-unquote boy that looks very much like a big man, whose grandfather Joseph Joestar is part of this long, large family known as the Joestar family. And he essentially joins forces with Jotaro and a few other men, notably Abdo and Polnareff, and they eventually have to hunt down this legendary vampire known as Dio, who's revived, and that's because he supposedly is the cause of Jotaro's mother's sickness. I've missed a lot of nuance in that, I know, just before I get that in the comments. I know for the sake of time, I'm just moving on briefly, but I'm sure that those who are aware of JoJo's know this. I'm just, you know, covering the bases here. And I'm not going to lie, from the synopsis, it does sound pretty dense. Dense, not in terms of dumb, but dense as in thick. There's a lot to get through. And it feels like there's been all this lore from before that you have to understand. And I have watched a bit of part one, but even so, I would say that this, again, I would say, opens its arms quite nicely and welcomes you in. I think what makes the JoJo's of Ye so great is that it's a 6-episode story that's really well told and it's really well spaced and paced. Generally, I'd say OVAs are just very convenient and also very accessible in many cases. There are some which aren't good, don't get me wrong, and they just completely are alienating. You don't understand anything that's going on. Not because there's lore before, I just don't think that they're composed very well. It's about 40 minutes of just like, what is going on? But in the case of this JoJo's OVA, I would say that it's broken up really nicely into these 6 episodes that concern very specific things to get to this very specific goal of fighting Dio, and then we fight Dio, and it does exactly what it says on the tin, but it's really well executed. The shorter length of VAs, I'd say, is a phenomenal format because it allows these very almost singular objective stories to be told really easily and really well. When you have a story that isn't quite, you know, 12 episodes or so, even though there are some OVAs which aren't 12 episodes, but I'd say that a lot of these longer stories are told these days. And we have a lot of short stories as well, which are told these days too, in the space of, say, music videos and short films in the independent space. But I would say that there is maybe perhaps a slight lack of these slightly shorter but not too long stories either. The 6-episode stuff, which do get put into ONAs, but even so, I'd say that there is still kind of a lack of those. And the OVA format really supplements that for me. Ironically, I'd say that these 6-episode OVAs, or bundles you could even call them, are much more fitting of our needs in today's media landscape, which is very fast-moving and about very quick consumption. And I would say that the 6-episode stuff kind of meets that more than the stuff we have today in, you know, the overproduction mode that anime is in right now, where we have a lot of 12-episode shows, 11-episode shows, or dual-cur 12-episode shows, which are straight-up 24, 25-episode things. The shorter length of VAs offer very convenient and very neat package that tell the slightly shorter stories, but still very well. And again, it's hard to generalize for all of them, but this one definitely is one worth getting into for that thing exactly that I described. Let's move on to Mamoru Oshii's Gosenzo-sama Babanzai, and what I've heard from multiple people, this is said to be one of the most important and one of the best OVAs ever. I'm not really going to talk about importance because I don't really have the facts and knowledge to back that up, but on the basis of one of the best, I think I can say that. At least one of the best OVAs that I've personally seen. All of these are my favorite OVAs, and I'm not even going to be able to cover all of them in this episode. There are quite a few that I really like that I'm just not gonna say, not because I can't say them, but I just won't have enough time and I didn't want to just throw some names in. But this, unlike the JoJo's OVA which we spoke about, the JoJo's OVA, I'd say from the outside looks dense and it's like, why would I get into this if I've never consumed JoJo's before? Gosenzo-sama Babanzai is an original anime and it's an original OVA, but in reverse, I would say this one is genuinely dense, and it's a lot. It's something that you're really gonna have to focus when you're watching and take in the words and the language being used. When I say dense, in this case, it's more so, it's very thick in regards to the direction and the writing. It takes a lot of understanding of narrative and fiction as a whole to really dive into what makes this a really great anime. And I unfortunately don't have an hour on my hands to describe why I think this is a great anime and one of the best OVAs and maybe anime I've ever seen. And perhaps it's because I haven't seen enough of Oshii's works, but this is probably one of the more complicated related things I've seen in my anime watching career alongside the Monogatari series, and that's because a lot of the humor and just the general discussion is oriented around language and narrative, and again, fiction. It's a metafictional work, and what it does concern is a family that meets a girl that claims to be the granddaughter of the main character Inumaru, who at the time is 17, and so the question is really, how can she be his granddaughter when he right there is not of that age, and how does it happen if it takes place in the future? And so the drama commences, basically, and it's a short drama, but it's one that's definitely full of content, and there's a lot to dig into and really unpack. So why do I like this OVA, and what does this prove about OVAs to me? It's really that there are so many odd and absurd works amongst the probable hundreds of 90s and OVAs that are out there. And Gosenzo-sama Bapanzai, though it's an incredible work and one of the most unique works I've ever come across, I would put it still in that odd and quite mysterious category. That sounds bad, I know, but I actually mean that in a really good way. This relates a lot to a point that we made in the last episode about original anime, and I recommend listening to that, before listening to this. And it's that there are so many what you could maybe call left of field works, maybe not as left of field as I'm saying, they're not completely out of this world, and particularly when you think about TV anime and the amount of risk you can take, this applies to TV and media as a whole and things that are made for profit. There are only so many risks you can take, and I'm sure OVA is also in that same sort of limitation too. But I would say the original space still has so many vibrant works, and so do 90s and 80s OVAs, and you just simply have to do the digging, and you'll find something that is completely out of this world, or just completely different to anything you've seen before, or at least very different to most of the things you've come across. Sitting in this large pile is probably one of the most unique stories you'll ever witness, and Gosenzo-sama Bapanzai, in my opinion, was kind of that for me. Recently, I watched I think this was last week when I was editing last week's podcast, like last Friday night, when I kind of got it out late, and this one's probably going to come out late too, unfortunately, sorry. And when I was editing that podcast, I was watching Ricky O and Ricky O 2, which are two, again, rather maybe obscure OVAs. I don't know how many people have genuinely watched Ricky O before. I'm not going to explain them, but go check them out. They're pretty funny, but it's probably the most like corny experience I've ever had. And yeah, that sounds bad, but it's just so cool how you can, out of this massive pile, find the weirdest, wacky things. And it only takes about 40 minutes to consume one of these. If you're talking about these shorter length of years, about 40 minutes. Or if you're talking about something longer, that's about 6 episodes. But they're very convenient, but also very, there are so many of these interesting experiences that you can dip your toes into. And as a anime thrill seeker, like I said last week, this really satisfies me, and I can dip my toes into so many different things and so many different genres, and I can still do this with a lot of time on my hands, which I really, really appreciate. In one week, I can watch a metafictional drama, and then on another week, I can watch a tough guy break out of prison and punch a bunch of dudes. That there is so much in this era of anime and within these 90s and 80s OVAs that I came to experience, and it's something that I really hope that more people get into, because there is so much fun to be had in this space. And the final OVA that I want to touch on is one that I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, have heard of, hopefully, and this is the one and only Gunbuster, directed by none other than the Hideaki Anno. I said JoJo's was amongst probably one of the more popular OVAs, and I still stand by that, but giving it a bit of a rethink, I would probably put it next to, in terms of popularity, again, it's just a bit of an estimate, I'd put it next to stuff like Legend of the Galactic Heroes, Fully Coolie, Record of Lotus War, and then I'd probably put in Gunbuster as well. I won't waffle on too much about Gunbuster, because I think it would only be right to spend a whole episode talking about Gunbuster, and I really should. This is a very special anime, and one that I really ended up enjoying. I can't believe that I spent so much time not watching Gunbuster, and when I actually experienced it, it was delightful, honestly. This is probably one of the more iconic mecha anime out there. I'm not going to make statements like this is the most iconic, because that never ends well. And most of the time when someone claims something's iconic, there's usually a way of saying that no, that's just not true. And so I'm not going to be making any sweeping statements like that. But I'll definitely, I know for sure that it is one of those sort of iconic anime out there, and at least those in the mecha anime space. And it's also a part of the kind of long running, unspoken sort of canon and unofficial canon of Trigger, Gainax, Mecha Works, alongside of course Evangelion, Gurren Lagann, Proman, the Gridman series, etc. And that's not even to add all the other Trigger Gainax works like Lilaco and like Re-Cutie Honey, which I believe is kind of done alongside Toei. I don't know exactly how that works. Kill la Kill and so many more. This is part of that long line. Just briefly on why I like Gunbuster specifically, I think it's because it goes in a place that I really didn't expect it to go. And that's by exploring the price that's to be paid with these massive space combats and massive space battles. Not too long ago, watched Gundam 0079, or what I like to call it 0079, but I don't think anyone calls it that. But I watched 0079 not too long ago, and something I realized about that was that this isn't a bad thing about 0079. I quite like that trilogy of movies, but I feel like it's very rooted in space, and the conflict remains in space, and the cost is very much like what you would expect on Earth when it comes to war being death, tragedy, and so forth. But Gunbuster deals with something that I never really thought about, and I feel like it's something that you don't really think about when you look at these other works and these big space battle works like Gundam, for example, the conclusion to Gurren Lagann, and that is time, really. And perhaps it's because of the nature of those works and why they don't address it, and that makes perfect sense. But Gunbuster covers what happens when people sacrifice their lives to helping those other people, and in the process even losing their friends due to time, because obviously when you return from space and you go back to Earth, the difference between times is different, and therefore I believe, I'm not a physicist or something, but I believe this is known as like time dilation or something like that. I watched a few things on it, but it totally went over my head. But the point is that because the time that you like sort of age slower out of space than you do on Earth, and as a result in Gunbuster, when they return back to Earth, a lot of their friends are much older. They'll be about, you know, in at one point they're in like their mid-30s or something, or with a child, and then they come back and their friends are like seniors and old women. I'm not really calling Gunbuster a subversion of anything before someone clips this and claims that I'm doing that. I'm not claiming it's a deconstruction or a subversion of this genre. No, it's still very much a mecha anime, and in ways, one of those big space battle types of mecha anime too. But it takes a perspective that I never really thought about and tells it really well across 6 episodes. And that's the type of storytelling that I love in these short OVAs. It's able to take something and gradually across the space of about 3 hours, if we're talking about the entirety of the work, gradually just build these up. And it doesn't need to take an entire like 12 episodes to do so, an entire 6 hours to do so, which is where the whole thing and convenience comes in for me. But finally, just to apply this to OVAs specifically, I would say that it's not like I wasn't aware of Gunbuster's existence. I've been aware of Gunbuster's existence for ages. But it's more so that it felt like a real blast from the past, kind of like this episode too. It felt like I was watching history unfold, and maybe even animation history be made right in front of my eyes. And that's something that I guess we can allocate to the technology of today and being able to, of course, consume these things, not in their original formats, but also I would say that doesn't really take away from the feeling that you're watching where it all began. And okay, it didn't all begin here. And as I said before, I'm not telling you that this is where animation history began or so. But that's really the effect I get with older popular works. You really get to, you get a very good glimpse into history. And that's what Gunbuster felt like for me. I felt like I was watching a very early part of what was to become a massive part of mecha anime. And Studio Trigger and Gainax being almost, well, the works that they produced being staples in this genre, and Gunbuster felt like me warping back to what felt like the near beginning of that long, long line and history, really. It's not particularly the start, and I don't want to claim that, but it's a very relevant footnote in this genre, and I felt very privileged to see that for myself with my own eyes. In general, I'd say these OVAs like Osenzo Samappa Banzai or Gunbuster are really valuable pieces of animation history. From the famous Jotaro vs. Dio fight animated in part by the legendary animator Toshiaki Ohtani, to Gunbuster's widescreen unmatted black and white final episode with that amazing welcome home sign at the end, and then the switch back to color, or Osenzo Samappa Banzai's performances from that of Satoru Utsunomiya or Mitsuo Iso, there is so much rich history that is animation history and relevant just animation in general that is in these OVAs. And I have to just say that the best way to get to grips with this is to simply experience it for yourself. To watch Gosenzo Samappa Banzai, to watch Gunbuster, to watch the JoJo's OVA. Very much like original anime, like we mentioned last week, these OVAs, particularly in the 90s and 80s era of anime, are quintessential to what anime is and how this meta has moved forward. And I think we really have to just experience it in order to really get to grips with the meta and where it gained some of its identity. Watching these OVAs, essentially, in my opinion, is experiencing history. And on that note, that is almost the end of this podcast, or at least that is the end of the main part. On the other side of this, let's go to closing thoughts, and I'll just give you a brief lowdown on what I feel about what has been discussed this episode, and why exactly I like OVAs and what I've learned from them. There are so many OVAs out there, and it would be hard to recommend you a specific set of them. I mentioned quite literally three, and on the offhand mentioned a few, just a name drop, a few just so you get a bit more scope in there. But overall, I would say that there are so many to choose from, and what is so beautiful about OVAs is that you can dip your toes into so many things so quickly, from Dragon Quest, from the Dragon Quest OVAs, which I'm not gonna lie, I did not like, to the saga of the Hakenden, which is a very interesting work, not one that I'm insanely fond of, but it's still good. I would say it's still pretty decent, and I think if you have a much bigger brain than me, which most of you probably have, it will probably be much easier to get it, but it went completely over my smooth brain, so yeah. And of course the ones that I mentioned today, Gosenzo Samappa Banzai, the crazy metafiction, to of course JoJo's and Gunbuster, there's so much to experience, and what I love about these is that they're, a lot of these at the time are shorter and much more, they're just so much easier to consume and digest, and that's what I love about these. Weirdly enough, as I said, they are probably more acquainted to the fast-moving media culture that we're in right now. What can we learn from this era of anime, or at least this format, you can argue? It's that there are so many stories that have been told in anime. And I don't think that, yes, seasonal anime makes that clear already with how many anime already being made, but the OVA format really rubs that in for me, that there are so many different things from so many different parts. This episode alone, I think, was proof of that. But when we even look to other things as well, and some which I'm still trying to literally watch at the moment, there are so many things that can be told and have been done in anime. And I I think that was really made clear to me during this experience. And finally, I found that this was a really big part of animation history, at least Japanese animation history. It's not the entirety of it, and you're going to have to go beyond forward and backwards into anime in order to really get to grips with the history of Japanese animation and how it's evolved. You're going to have to watch works from today, you're going to have to watch works from the early 20th century, you're going to have to watch stuff from this era and the 70s and the 60s and so forth. This is not the complete of it, but I'd say that it's a really enlightening and rich experience to see some of these animators make names for themselves in these OVAs, and in some cases even produce some of their most interesting work. And I honestly just feel honored to have experienced all of that. Thank you for listening to this episode of Guest in the Mecha. That has been episode 95. We are on now what will be the latter half of the podcast, at least in the 90s episode range, which kind of scares me, but I'm also quite kind of excited as well, because I have loads of plans to do some really, I would say, challenging stuff, and something that I'm just very excited for what is to come, really. I do want to say now, and I can't promise a specific date. It's this summer, but video podcasts are coming. Again, I can't say a specific time because I'm still trying to organize that, but in the next few, within this like 90 episode range, there should be, I say should be, unless something happens, a video podcast available. And when I say video, I don't just mean a card that you alt tab out of or just minimize and do something else on. I mean a genuine one that you can watch on YouTube, and you can see me and my expressions as I talk about anime in kind of an obsessive way. So yeah, do look forward to that. Hopefully that will be out soon, and that will be the regular format of the podcast. Of course, audio podcasts are not going away anywhere, but that's going to be a new way of consuming the podcast very soon. As always, if you do enjoy this podcast, leave it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. That really helps out the show and helps other people find it. It's really appreciated. And also, what will happen is that I will read it out at the beginning of the show, or at least when I can in the show as well, just to show my appreciation. So if you want to actually listen to your review being read out, then feel free to leave it. And that also means that when the video podcasts do come out, I'm going to try and not forget to do that, because I'm going to try and keep the show as similar as possible. And so you have your podcast reviewed, or no, not reviewed, sorry. You have your review said live on the podcast. I'll show it. And yeah, so that's a thing that you can do if you really want to support. Also, if you do enjoy as well and you're listening on YouTube, subscribe. You know why you would subscribe, because it comes into your notifications on your phone or whatever you consume it on. Liking the video and commenting. I'm very happy to engage in discourse in the comments, as I did do this week quite a lot. Thank you for your like questions and also just comments as well. I do check YouTube like once every day, just to see if there are comments. And so apologies if I do answer a bit late, but I am there and I will reply. I just get very lazy sometimes. I'm sorry, but subscribe, comment, like those things, and press the bell as well if you really want to get them in your inbox and stuff on your phone or whatever. And so that is it. I will see you next week on the podcast. As always, have a great rest of your weekend. Have a great rest of your week, or whatever you are doing today or tomorrow, whenever. I have been your host, Shamar, today, and this has been Guest in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows: Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Synthwave by Alex McCulloch, and Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.